You are listening to the Doug Hagman Radio Show, weekdays 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Time. And now the man behind the mic, a private investigator with over 30 years under his belt, Doug Hagman.
Good morning, everyone. It's 6 a.m. on the West Coast of America, 9 a.m. here in the East. Welcome to Hagman. It's the Doug Hagman Investigative Hour for today. It is Tuesday, March 20, 2018. Thanks for joining me this morning. I'm going to take an in-depth look at what's going on. I'm going to tell you right now, there will be people that will be perp walked, that will be going to jail. I know, I've gotten emails saying, oh, you're just full of it. You know, nothing's going to happen. Nothing ever does happen. But trust me on this, I'm telling you right now, we are going to see some justice served. And the first part of that, of course, was the termination of McCabe on Friday. Went over that a little bit yesterday, talking about McCabe. But what we're looking at is much, much, much deeper. The president knows it. The people who are paying attention know it. You know it. I know it. We all know it. So there are things that are taking place right now. Things are being revealed, and there will be, without a doubt, there will be some people from high levels of the FBI and conceivably some people from the Department of Justice going to prison over their activities. And let me just kind of set the stage here. Just in the event that I've got new listeners every day. So a lot of this, some people don't know. Here's the overall summary of things. You had a weaponized Department of Justice and FBI under Obama. You had Hillary Clinton running as a Democratic candidate for president. Clinton, don't forget the Clintons back in the 1990s, how they politicized and weaponized various government agencies, including the FBI, including the Department of Justice. Remember Janet Reno. Remember those days. Don't forget those days. History is important. The recent history is critical for people to really understand. The crux of today, what we're seeing today, really stems from something, I suppose, if you were kind of to do a post-mortem on what we're seeing today. Where did this all start, or how did this all start? Where we've got a special counsel, but we also have the allegations of spying on Donald Trump. I just kind of want to paint a very, very, just sketching a picture here for you. It was back in April of 2016 when Admiral Mike Rogers ordered an audit of the NSA program. It was April 2016, an audit order from Admiral Mike Rogers. What that order was, or what that audit found, as detailed in a 99-page report. Remember that 99-page report issued by FISA Court Judge Rosemary Collier. And that came out, that was actually written April 27th, 2017. 99-page, heavily redacted. That came out not too long ago, but that detailed FISA abuses. As a matter of fact, that audit showed that there were misuses of the FISA court system, misuses of raw intelligence. And that report itself, one of the very important things that report did was showed that there was rampant surveillance and sharing of raw intelligence to subcontractors or contractors. And those contractors, subcontractors included, but were not limited to, Fusion GPS. Okay, now, does that sound familiar? I think everyone's on the same page there. The redactions of that 99-page report, and I spoke about this many times, the redactions. What was redacted from that report? It was heavily redacted. It was the names of the contractors. For example, Fusion GPS was redacted from that report. The names of the individuals at the FBI and the Department of Justice involved in the raw intelligence sharing and the unmasking process, which was illegal. And so that was the redactions. Now you remember in the waning days of Obama, how he changed the rules, and this is important to really recall. I'm not going to get too detailed in this. I'm just giving you a rough sketch here. Obama, as he was leaving office, changed the rules of intelligence collection and sharing procedures, which led to this tacit authorization of unmaskings. Soon we had unmasking requests by people such as Samantha Power and others who had really no business knowing the names. And as a matter of fact, no one had any business of unmasking, period, of the names of Americans. And unmasking refers to disclosing the names of American citizens, and this is important, of American citizens in intelligence collection. So we are constitutionally protected. We're protected by, among others, the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, or privacy is protected. What we saw during the last waning days of the Obama regime was a direct assault on our Constitution, specifically on the Fourth Amendment. And how it was done, of course, was through a weaponized FBI and Department of Justice. And again, sketching rough details in here. Who were the players at the FBI and the Department of Justice? Very simple. On the FBI side, you had James Comey. You had Andrew McCabe. Now, part of the National Security Division of the FBI was Bill Priestep. Under Bill Priestep worked a guy by the name of Peter Strzok. Okay, so it goes Comey, McCabe, and then for the National Security Division, Bill Priestep, and then under Priestep is Peter Strzok. Now, all of the aforementioned names, all of the aforementioned people, have been removed from the FBI, except for one, Bill Priestep. Why? Set that aside in your mind. Bill Priestep, remember that name. His name rarely comes up. Comey referenced Bill Priestep. I've talked about this before. Comey referenced Bill Priestep as the head of the counterintelligence, National Security Division, that is. Referenced him by title, but not by name, during hearings, citing the sensitivity of the investigation of the Donald Trump team, okay? But I believe, and this is based on a collection of information, specifically information I've received from one source within the FBI world, within that world of the FBI, that Bill Priestep is actually cooperating and turning over information. You notice that Comey, of course, he's out writing a book, and McCabe, of course, was terminated last Friday, some 36 hours prior to him receiving his a full retirement, and he was terminated by the Office of Professional Responsibility, OPR, a very apolitical organization, had nothing to do with Donald Trump, had nothing to do with, that was, you know, I was trying to think of like a corollary or an analogy. That'd be like your own union terminating, you know, recommended, saying, hey, I can't help you. You're done. You're over. Like if you belong to a union. In my mind, that's how I kind of think of this. Those are the players on the FBI side, the primary players. Now, there are many more at the higher levels. Now, what about the Department of Justice side? You had, of course, the mother of them all, Loretta Lynch. And then under Lynch, you had Sally Yates. And then the director of their National Security Division, the Department of Justice National Security Division, a guy by the name of John Carlin. Under Carlin worked Bruce Orr. Now, basically, all of them are gone. Orr warrants some interest of mine. You know, little things bother me. kind of like, and I'll mention this again, I know there's a couple of people out there that absolutely hate this when I say this, but kind of like, you know, Columbo. Yeah, a couple of things just bother me. The ore situation has bothered me a lot, and I'm going to talk about the ore situation here, you know, Nelly and Bruce Ohr, because I think it's extremely critical, because that this alone tells a much greater story. But going back to the overall sketch, you had the audit by Rogers, as I stated, a 99-page FISA court memo written by Rosemary, Judge Rosemary Collier, that was dated and later declassified, was dated April 27, 2017, that outlined a series of illegal activities, disclosures, just illegality. And then, of course, don't forget it was Admiral Mike Rogers who notified President Donald Trump right after his inauguration that surveillance was still ongoing. And for reasons that we've spoken about before, I've spoken about before, the following day, President Donald Trump, president-elect at that point, left Trump Tower, moved his entire operation to Bedminster, New Jersey. All right. Now, you're going to hear things like 702 compliance and 302s and such. 702 is that number. That's the section of it's the wire or the authorization for the FISA warrants. Okay, very simply. And again, I'm just giving you a rough sketch here. But what's this all about? Well, one more thing. With respect to the findings, you'll notice that subsequent investigation by the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence and by the Senate Judiciary Committee has found that not only was there rampant abuses of the FISA court process, but of course the FISA court was lied to by members of the FBI and Department of Justice based on information provided by Fusion GPS, Christopher Steele, Bruce and Nelly Ohr. And also involved at the periphery of this, you've heard about this too, Michael Isikoff, a reporter, Yahoo News. Well, how does he fit into the mix? Well, the FBI, in order to get the FISA warrants on the Donald Trump campaign, used Isikoff's Yahoo News article, which as part of the FISA warrant process. And where did Isikoff get that information? Reportedly from Christopher Steele, the 35-page salacious unverified dossier. And I'm going to talk about this dossier. And I'm going to plant something in your mind this morning that I want you to think about. I want you to consider carefully. I hinted at it last night in the flagship show, the Hagman Report. And we're going to talk about something that I think is so extremely critical to where we are right now. It blew my mind when I started getting into it, and I think it'll do the same for you. Now, before I go any further, I want to thank everyone for supporting the Hagman Report. I want to thank people for sending your emails, and thank you. So many emails, I read them all. Roger from Australia, thank you. I'll be talking with you, or I'll be communicating with you. Thank you so very much for your email. But for all of those who support our endeavors, thank you so very much. We are actually undergoing some upgrades and some changes, and we're working very hard behind the scenes when we're not on air. So we, just as a matter of note, our flagship show, we are audio only this week, kind of a throwback to the old days. Better audio, of course, but video is off for the regular programming until next Monday. But I also want to thank one of our new sponsors, DaVinci Search Book Meet. You know, when I was a PI, I needed to meet people in different cities. If I had this service back then, my goodness, would I I'm telling you right now, I needed something like this back then. It wasn't available. Now it is. Search book meet DaVinci. Here's the deal. With DaVinci, you can find a perfect meeting room for your face-to-face business meetings. Search, book, and meet. That's a very simple mantra, if you will. You don't have to. In other words, you don't have to meet your client or whatever, whoever, at a donut shop or a coffee shop or a Starbucks or whatever. You can actually have a meeting room prepared for you. So let's say you're based in Phoenix, but you need to meet customers face-to-face in New York or Los Angeles or even Omaha. You can skip the coffee shop meeting and get a DaVinci meeting room instead. It's fast. It's affordable. It's easy. Again, search, book, meet. From day offices to conference rooms to boardrooms to training spaces, the DaVinci platform provides you instant access to over 5,000 affordable meeting rooms in well-known office locations in every city. Your DaVinci meeting room comes with high-speed internet and all of the presentation tools you need to make your next meeting a success. And you know what? The best part of it all, it's affordable. It all starts at, what, $10 an hour? $10 an hour. $10. Just remember these three words, search, book, and meet. Here's what you need to do. Go to DaVinciMeet.com/Hagman. That is DaVinciMeet.com/Hagman. And for a limited time, you get 50% off your first purchase. That's DaVinciMeet.com/Hagman. Terms and conditions apply. See DaVinciMeet.com/Hagman for details. It's a great service, folks. It really is. So those people on the road doing business, you want a meeting room, there you go. Under $10 an hour. Can't beat it. Okay, so we are talking about an extremely critically vital, you need to understand exactly what's taking place, what has gone on, and what is taking place today, because people will be going to jail. This I can assure you. The writing's on the wall. But there's something deeper here going on, and this is what I'd like you to open your mind up to. I gave you the rough sketch at the beginning of the show. And all of this was a spy operation to set up now President Donald Trump. It was political in nature, at least at the initial stages. It was political in nature in order to get Hillary Clinton into office. It's that simple, but it's not that simple because I'm bothered by a few things. A few things that other shows, hey, they have not gone into this depth that I'm going to take you. I'm going to take you right into the heart, the belly of the beast, shall we say. You know, as you well know, I love to read. I love history. And I've got some favorite authors, including Dinah West, American Betrayal. And she wrote from her website, dinahwest.net, she wrote a series that I'm not even sure when this ran or when this ended or began, but she was talking about what I'm talking about, what's been taking place. And she noted that evidence already indicates, and this is back in December, roughly late December, that evidence already indicates that a subversive effort was mounted from inside the United States government by the deep state under Barack Obama, and from outside of the U.S. government by entities including Hillary Clinton, the Hillary Clinton campaign, the DNC, that's the Democratic National Committee, and their law firm Perkins Coie. The individuals, the plotters, include the Obama White House, the intelligence community, the Justice Department officials. I named them. Some who continue to serve in the Trump administration. But this same effort, as pointed out, and this is where it gets extremely, extremely important, the same effort has international dimensions. This encompasses elements of British and Russian intelligence coordinated through the opposition research firm Fusion GPS, which, cites Ms. West, almost looks like an intelligence agency itself, and whose services include open conduits into the media, and some of them paid. Undoubtedly, there are still people unknown in a dimly seen cast of masterminds and dupes, strategists and foot soldiers. Look, for example, and this cites citing Ms. West, we still don't know what kind of hat that Senator John McCain wore in advancing and validating the fusion British-Russian Democratic opposition research paper that we all call the dossier, which may have well been laundered or elevated by the FBI into an intelligence document. We know now that it was to trigger FISA surveillance, the government spying on President Donald Trump and his team members, who was in command. The White House, the Justice, FBI, Fusion, the Hillary campaign. Look, we have, as I went through, we've got ample, sufficient evidence to show that what has gone on was an effort, was an assault on the Constitution, was an effort to subvert the Constitution, it was a direct assault on our nation and our Constitution. I love the way Diana West writes, but she said this, she wrote this, fins and teeth float to the surface, but the driving, obsessing, consuming motivations are still moving somewhere out of sight. It is next to implausible to believe that this was all and only about securing the presidency for Hillary Clinton. I spoke about this last night. That so many career officials would risk all just for her and engage in what may be one day acknowledged or politically or potentially capital crimes, the crime of treason. Are you telling me that everything that we saw, that everything we're outlining, everything that we're talking about was merely done to elevate Hillary Clinton into office? I really want you to ponder that for a moment. I assert no, that there's something much greater, much deeper. Again, let me say this, restate this. It is next to impossible to believe that all of the things that we were talking about, the assaults on the Constitution, the spying, the unmasking, the changing of the rules through executive order under Obama, the weaponization of the FBI, the Department of Justice, this whole process, are you telling me that this was all and only about securing the presidency for Hillary Clinton? Is that what you're saying? That so many career officials would risk all just for her and engage in what we may one day acknowledge are potentially capital crimes of treason? Consider that Washington runs on ebb and flow and revolving doors, and all that any defeated establishment person had to do was just simply wait, 4 years, 2 years, or even less, a blink of the beltway eye, and things would change. Look, what we're living through is not politics as usual, and it's not solely for political elevation, for political gain. Could it be that Barack Hussein Obama's many contributions to advancing socialism were sufficient cause for so many to take such high risks? Look, that seems unlikely too. Everyone knows the bureaucratic Titanic, or our bureaucracy. Look, it's much more resilient and enduring than any outsider president. Yeah, the 2016 election, the presidential election, that was a shock to many, wasn't it? The left. But we're looking at something much greater, in my view. Much greater. And this is what I really want everyone to consider. This is my message here. There's something more than politics as usual. There's something more than than the dirty Chicago and type politics at play here. So what unknown self-interest, what hidden fanaticism made this presidential, or this transfer of presidential power, different from all other previous transitions of presidential power? One can assume that there are state crimes to cover up, state corruptions to hide from the threat of discovery and punishment. Okay, we know that crimes were committed by Obama, the Obama regime, much like other presidential administrations, but perhaps far worse. But there's something more. There's something much more. Diana West writes that we can seize on the struck page text about the insurance policy, apparently the Fusion GPS or Fusion dossier. We can shiver over Strzok's mention of the espionage machine party and the Stasi-like mindset it seems to reveal in senior federal officials or officers of the law. But there's more. Now, go back to December 11, 2017. Fox News, James Rosen, first reported on Bruce and Nellie Orr and their respective connections to Glenn Simpson, Fusion, and the GPS, Fusion GPS dossier. Bruce Orr was a senior Justice Department official until his demotion one day before Rosen reported on his secret contacts with the DNC Hillary Fusion contractor Christopher Steele and Fusion GPS chief Glenn Simpson. Bruce Orr's wife, Nellie Orr, we have learned, was working for Fusion GPS on the anti-Donald Trump research, and even most likely, and as we know now, on the dossier itself, even as her Department of Justice official husband was secretly meeting with the Fusion GPS dossier principals. There's something about the Bruce and Nellie Orr that I want to take a really close look at. There's something really troublesome about Bruce and Nellie Orr, specifically Nellie Orr. Consider the fact, of course, that she applied for and received a ham radio license. I've talked about this before, a ham radio operator's license. Why? Well, that this is one way, a very effective way to communicate outside of the normal risk of communication intercepts. But consider this. Here you have Bruce Orr, basically number four, the number four guy at the Department of Justice, whose wife, hired by Fusion GPS, suddenly applies for and receives a ham radio license. By itself, that I get it. But this is a way, again, to communicate outside of the normal risk of communication intercepts. Who was she communicating with? Well, when you start looking into this, again, little things bother me. The collaborations of Glenn Simpson and both Bruce and Nellie Orr, if you go back and look, you'll find that, they've got a past together. In fact, going back to 2010, seems that Glenn Simpson, Bruce, and Nellie Orr were working on something called an expert working group. This is a working group report on international organized crime. They're working together. Bruce Orr was the chief of the Organized Crime and Racketeering Section, Criminal Division, U.S. Department of Justice. Nellie Orr was a researcher for something called Open Source Works. Glenn Simpson, meanwhile, was a senior fellow at the International Assessment and Strategy Center out of where? Alexandria, Virginia. All right, so go back to 2010. EWG, Expert Working Group. There was a report issued on international organized crime. They're working together. Now, in 2010, Bruce Orr was already at the Justice Department. Glenn Simpson was working with something called, it was a think tank, something called International Assessment and Strategy Center, and Nellie Orr was a researcher at Open Source Works. Well, what's Open Source Works? It's described as the CIA's in-house open source analysis component. Say what? Open Source Works, it's described as the CIA's in-house open source analysis component. Simpson would later, in fact, the following year in 2011, found Fusion GPS. But look at the integration. You've got a member of the DOJ working with the think tank International Assessment and Strategy Center, which was where Glenn Simpson was working, and you got Nellie Orr, who was a researcher at Open Source Works, which was really the CIA's in-house open source analysis component. There's an interesting article that Lee Smith of the Tablet wrote that references a Facebook posting by Glenn Simpson's wife, who is Mary Jacoby. On June 24th, 2017, Jacoby went to Facebook and wrote this. Again, think of the date, June 24th, 2017. It's come to my attention that some people still don't realize what Glenn's role was in exposing Putin's control of Donald Trump. Let's be clear. Glenn conducted the investigation. Glenn hired Chris Steele. Chris Steele worked for Glenn, by the way. And that's gone from Facebook. Now, it's interesting because Lee Smith really presents that Facebook posting as evidence of Simpson's greater role in the authorship of the dossier, which is attributed to Fusion GPS's contractor, retired MI6 agent Christopher Steele. But let's stop for a moment and consider the actual dossier itself. How many people out there, show hands, how many people have read the dossier? I've read it, 35 pages. Yes, salacious. Yes, unverified. But there's something else bothering me about this. Before I get into that, I just want to make a note here as well. Mary Jacoby, that same person who on June 24th, 2017, took to Facebook and wrote that glowing report of her husband Glenn, you go back and you look at the White House visitor logs and find that in April of 2016, there's a visit to the White House by Mary Jacoby. Didn't I mention April 2016 earlier in this broadcast? Let me grab my notes here. I'm sure I did. Oh, yeah. April 2016 is when Admiral Mike Rogers of the NSA said, we're going to do an audit on the NSA, on the information sharing. As a matter of fact, it was April 2016 when Admiral Mike Rogers cut off all sources to external groups such as Fusion GPS. Coincidence? I think not. Oh, but there's so much more. Now, that tablet article, by the way, I'm going to reference that, and of course, Diana West references it as well. Lee Smith is the author of that tablet article. But Lee Smith posits that the origins of the anti-Trump dossier go back a decade to when Glenn Simpson and Mary Jacoby, his wife, both were co-writers at the Wall Street Journal. And they discovered and I'm quoting this now, a world-class sleazeball that lobbyist Paul Manafort was, for hiring himself out to guide processions of Russian/Ukrainian oligarchs through the Washington political and media circles. Now, Manafort, of course, would end up serving briefly as the campaign manager for Donald Trump in the summer of 2016. But there's something here that's deeper. Again, Manafort came on Simpson's radar back years ago. And you'll notice that whenever Manafort is discussed, it's about the Ukrainian connections and such. But remember the talk about the Magnitsky Act. Now, hold that thought for a moment, because Simpson Glenn Simpson perhaps envisioned the dossier, the 35-page dossier, simply as a way to really get at Paul Manafort, who they believed was a very bad guy. Everyone, especially Donald Trump's supporters, owe Simpson and Mary Jacoby their gratitude for ridding American politics of Paul Manafort, right? I mean, that's the mentality. But there's a problem with all of this. Remember the Magnitsky Act. The Fusion GPS, their lobbying efforts against the Magnitsky Act sanctions on individually mainly Russian oligarchs, lobbying against the Magnitsky Act, according to all known and conventional wisdom, is a very, very bad thing. And in fact, that Magnitsky Act came out, perhaps you recall this, in the matters of that meeting with Natalia Veselnitskaya and Donald Trump Jr. at Trump Tower. But the bottom line here, and excuse me for rattling the papers here, but I've got notes, so many notes here. It's interesting when you look at the role of Fusion GPS, there's a contradiction here. They're obviously exposing Russian misdeeds and the Russian influence of our campaign and exposing Paul Manafort, who's basically a world-class sleazeball. But at one point, they were actually advocating against the Magnitsky Act. How can this possibly be? Well, Lee Smith, the author of the tablet piece, essentially puts the contradiction down to what he has decided is Glenn Simpson's and Fusion's ignorance of all things Russian. Quoted from the article, none of Fusion GPS's principals knew very much about Russia. Otherwise, it's inconceivable that Fusion GPS would have taken on a project from pro-Kremlin elements to undermine, in American law, the Magnitsky Act at the same time it was being paid by the Clinton campaign and the DNC to tie the Trump campaign to pro-Clinton elements. In other words, it doesn't make sense. And you know what, folks? I got a problem when things don't make sense. I got a problem. Just one more thing. One more question, sir. Okay. Understand this, that when you look at active measures, you look at what Russia has done, the old Soviet Union, what they have done, the KGB, to America, it's very disconcerting to say the least. Are we not seeing perhaps active measures of the Kremlin, the patently Soviet Russia communist strategic technique of attempting to control both sides, all sides at once, the scissors strategy? Well, I think it's possible. But how do you explain Fusion's pro-Putin and anti-Putin lobbying at the same time, playing both sides of the fence? There's a question for you there. However, let's go back to Bruce and Nellie Orr and Fusion GPS, because this is where it gets intense, and please pay attention, and because I'm going to tie all this up at the end of this broadcast. I believe at the epicenter of what we're seeing is a communist or a Marxist Stalinist plot to overthrow the United States. I don't believe it was all just to put Hillary Clinton in office. Oh, that was a lot of it, but not all of it. No. Let's look at Nellie Orr, the mystery woman of intrigue. Her marriage to DOJ official Bruce Orr, her fluency in Russian, her ham radio operator's license, and finally, and perhaps most of all, the possibility that she had a hand in the anti-Donald Trump dossier. Now, again, Diana West goes into very great detail about Nellie Orr, much more detail than I will go into here. But again, Nellie Orr, Fusion GPS, the wife of Bruce Orr. What? Who is she? She grew up, look, Nellie H. Orr. H stands for Hauk, which is Orr's maiden name. When you go through her lineage and such, you can find that Nellie grew up in a family on the intellectual left. You know, that's the mainstream of academic or American academia. Her mother was an English professor. Her mother was an activist in black, white racial issues back in the late 60s and 70s, including interracial adoption and promoting racial equality in education. And you can look at this article and look at her background, and it's very interesting. Also discussed was the paranoia engendered by McCarthyism, a topic very close and near and dear to my heart, because McCarthy was correct. But this pro-Stalinist, if you will, intellectual bias. And Nellie's father, Richard Hauk, was a botany professor. And it's interesting because Diana West talks about this. His listed works are mainly scientific, but his biological notes highlight his interest in creationism, bioethics, and in nuclear winter. All right. Now, you got to remember, this is the heyday of the Reagan administration. The Soviet strategists were concentrating on thwarting Reagan's program to modernize U.S. and NATO arsenals. You talk about Russian influence, by the way. It was the active measures of the Brezhnev, Andropov, Chernenko, Gorbachev's Kremlin that really was the driving factor behind Western disarmament movement, that movement known as the peace movement or the nuclear freeze movement that ranged across Europe and the United States, sparking outrage, of course, by way of disinformation against Star Wars, against Reagan. Now, there's a guy, a master spy and a defector. His name is Sergei. Boy, I'm going to screw up this last name. Tretyakov. I'm sorry. Well, rough on names, huh? But he would maintain that the nuclear winter, the theory that this nuclear attack would block out the sun and initiate a new ice age, it was a deliberately concocted KGB disinformation campaign to undermine public support for U.S. and NATO weaponry. Now, say what you will, believe what you will about nuclear winter. That's not the issue. Here's the issue. It's about forcing the United States, forcing NATO to disarm. That's what this is all about. Getting people like Carl Sagan on board and instrumental in promoting the concept of nuclear winter. But when you start to look at the background of this, and I'm going deep into this for a reason, you start to look at the background, you could see that these are active measures. This is what the Soviet Union and now Russia engages in. The KGB was responsible for creating the entire nuclear winter scenario, virtually, primarily to stop Pershing missiles from being installed in Europe. Now, I'm not going to address nuclear winter in and of itself. But understand the concept here. I'm not saying nuclear weapons are good. I'm not saying that at all. I'm not saying nuclear winter doesn't exist. What I'm saying is, like everything else, that concept was weaponized by the Kremlin. Now, and this was embraced by Nellie Orr's parents. Now, let's take a look at Nellie Orr a little bit even deeper, a little bit closer. Nellie Orr herself. She graduated from Harvard Radcliffe with a BA in Russian history and literature back in 1983. She was, and this is hard for me to even comprehend, she is a Stalin apologist. Think about that for a second. Now, again, she graduated from Harvard Radcliffe with a BA in Russian history and literature back in 1983. And while her father was mulling nuclear winter, Harvard professor Richard Pipes, this well-known Russia scholar, scholar of Russia and the Soviet Union, was preparing to publish his 1984 book, Survival Is Not Enough, Soviet Realities and America's Future, in which this Pipes guy thanks his assistant, Nellie Hawk, for her dedicated work. Now, not only was Pipes a prominent anti-communist on Harvard senior faculty, he had just completed a stint on Ronald Reagan's National Security Council as director of East European and Soviet Affairs. Now, doesn't that seem a little bit contrary to what I just said? After graduation, Nellie Orr, then Nellie Hawk, continued her studies, working toward her PhD in Russian history at Stanford. Now, what happened there at Stanford? You could look at some of her academic works are available, some are not, but very, very pro-Stalin, shall we say. In 1990, Nellie Hawk Orr completed her Stanford PhD thesis. It was 418 pages in length, titled Collective Farms in Russian Peasant Society, 1933 to 1937, The Stabilization of the Kolkhoz Order. I'm sorry, bad pronunciation here. In the 1990s, she taught history at Vassar. Now, according to an online profile, she went on to work as an independent contractor during work doing research and translation projects on topics in Russian science and technology. Now, there's not a lot more made public about her career until she pops up again in 2010, as I mentioned, as a CIA analyst in the expert working group, including her DOJ husband and future Fusion boss Glenn Simpson. Now, what about her PhD thesis? And this is where it gets kind of twisted. The term Kolkhoz, K-O-L-K-H-O-Z, refers to the collective farm, the spawn of agricultural Bolshevism forcibly wrought between 1929 and 1932 from the regime's abolition of private property and its war on landholding Ukraine peasantry. See how Ukraine comes into this and the Stalinist stuff comes in on this? So here we have Nellie Orr in that position. Now, I'm not going to get, again, that's about as deep as I'm going to go into Nellie Orr's academic work, except to say that Nellie Orr wrote a review of a specific book and talks about the terror and excitement. You heard me right. Terror and excitement of the Stalin era. Again, an apologist for Stalin, Russia's Stalin. So it gives you a glimpse, an important glimpse of Nellie Orr's academic biases and her political biases as well. All right. So you've really got to understand that and understand what we're seeing here. And her effect on academia and her effect from academia, I suppose. And Diana West goes into great detail about the opening up of the archives, the Soviet archives, after the fall of the Soviet Union and, of course, the state control over the archives and the research done. As a matter of fact, I found this interesting as a side note that Russian state control over the archives and who could enter them and what they could see inside was extremely controlled. I mean, the state controlled, the Russia controlled the number of people who were allowed. And as a matter of fact, under 40 per year at the height of detente back in the mid-70s, it peaked out about 50 in 1991-92. And some of this was funded by the United States government. Very interesting, nonetheless. And you can read this, and I'll put a link to it in the program description. But the whole process, the whole concept of this pro-Stalinist movement and this ideology driving Nellie Orr, all right? So you've got this Fusion GPS co-founder, Glenn Simpson, and this is where it gets really interesting, testifies before the House and Senate. He deliberately omitted the name of his key Russian-speaking employee who was working specifically on the anti-Donald Trump project for the DNC and for the Hillary Clinton campaign. he failed to mention Nellie Orr. In fact, it seemed like when you go back and you look, he took great pains into making sure that that name never came up. Why? Could it be because simply that she was the wife of DOJ number four guy, Bruce Orr? Or could it be something different? I contend it's something even more. Remember I said put the dossier aside for a minute, that 35-page document. I'm going to move from Diana West's material to Jack Cashel and Joel Gilbert, a very interesting report they did that I'm in full agreement with, and that is this. That dossier was not written by someone whose language, primary language, was English or even, you know, the British English. No. That dossier was written by a person whose language, or first language, primary language, was not English. Many will claim that Christopher Steele wrote the dossier, or at least introduced it to the public in January 2017, and was touted as the author of the Fusion GPS Trump-Russia dossier. Now, Jack Cashel, who's been in our studio, I've, a great guy, I've spoken with him, he's a tremendous researcher and a great author, talking with Jack about this and other matters, but this in particular, said basically, look, the dossier was written by an individual not fully fluent in English, not fully fluent in English, British, or American speech. And so many examples were pointed out in this dossier. So what's going on here? If that's, what do we have? I just threw out a whole bunch of information. Some of it you might say, well, that's rather pointless. What's going on here? Well, I'm going to tell you. Nellie Orr, at the center of this, the wife of DOJ official Bruce Orr, the woman who applied for and received a ham radio operator's license in the spring of 2016. How did her marital relationship with the senior DOJ official factor into the Fusion anti-Trump research process? And why did Glenn Simpson take such great steps into making sure that her name was not mentioned and mentioned during interviews? What about the bank records that reflect that Fusion contracted with Nellie Orr to help their company with its research and analysis of Donald Trump? The one government position Nellie Orr was known to have, as I mentioned, was under CIA auspices as a researcher. In 2010, when she was with the CIA, she, her husband, and Glenn Simpson, again, all served together in an expert working group on international organized crime. Now, when you look at everything together, there's another interesting aspect to this. There's a guy by the name of Edward Baumgartner. All right. Now, this guy, as a matter of fact, there's another Fusion GPS subcontractor, a man who was identified by Glenn Simpson, who said that there's a longstanding relationship with, is named Ed Baumgartner. As a matter of fact, during Glenn Simpson's testimony to the House, he was asked, here's the question, I'm going to quote it exactly. Okay, were there individuals besides yourself who either worked for Fusion or on behalf of Fusion worked on both the various projects? I'm not going to get into this, for Perkins Coie. The answer by Glenn Simpson was this, and I quote, I mean, there is one in particular who did some work on both cases as a subcontractor. I actually think within my staff there is not much overlap. We have a longstanding relationship with a subcontractor named Ed Baumgartner, who has a degree in Russian from Vassar, I think. Now, I don't know if you'd call him a linguist. He's not a translator, but he works for us on Russian things. Well, guess what? Ed Baumgartner has a past with Nellie Orr at Vassar. Could it be that Fusion's Ed Baumgartner was a student of Fusion's Nellie Orr's during their time both at Vassar? Because Baumgartner attended Vassar between 1991 and 1995, during which time Nellie Orr taught there Russian studies. Think about this. this whole Russian red thread that's going through all of this. And it's interesting when you, again, I'm running out of time here, but it's interesting when you look at the conspirators involved in the overthrowing of our Constitution and a duly elected president and working on behalf of Hillary Clinton. When you look at this in its totality, and you ask yourself why the Nelly Orr, the Russian-speaking ham radio operator, Fusion GPS boss Glenn Simpson tried in vain to hide from investigators in Baumgartner's position, why all of this was taking place in the different positions. Baumgartner, for example, tweeting against Sarah Sanders, having tweet just unbelievable remarks on Twitter. If you look at Ed Baumgartner's Twitter feed, and some of the language that Baumgartner used. Again, this is a guy who worked with and for Fusion GPS and along with Nelly Orr. You're going to see some apologetics for pro-Stalinist tactics. This is absolutely incredible that the further down you dive, the more information that comes to the surface. Just to wrap this up, look at the principles involved here. Even John Brennan, look at all of the principles involved in what appears to be, in what really is, a coup inside our government, from members inside our government and forces outside of our government. But what's the running ideology here? Is there something common among the anti-Donald Trump, anti-Constitution co-conspirators? There is. It's an ideology based in Marxism. And why Marxism? Marxism is surely the most common driver of coups, of revolutions, both successful and failed, for over the last 200 years. Well, throughout the 20th century, Moscow, the main instigator and enabler of some of these Marxist movements, especially inside the United States. Donald Trump, meanwhile, the guy who single-handedly revived America first, he poses the greatest menace for generations to the core principles of international communism, whether or not he or anyone else knows it. Now, people will say, well, the Soviet Union, just they vanished back in 1991, along with all of the nasty communist strategies to destroy the United States and control the world, right? No, not so fast. It's interesting. What did vanish, without a doubt, was the idea of an enemy. And folks, that was no accident. As I said last night, and I'm saying this again, the major secret weapon is to deprive you, meaning us, of an enemy. This by General Arbatov of the Soviet Union, stated back in 1988 at a conference of Soviet and American scientists at UC Irvine. That's right. What we're seeing here, the common thread, is this Marxist ideology. So I submit to you, in closing, look at the backgrounds of all of these individuals. Look beyond the politics and into the ideology, and you will find what we are smack dab facing is a communist takeover of the United States then and now. And that concludes my opening statement for this show. I want to thank you each and everyone for listening. I hope I made sense. It's the communist ideology, the Marxist-Stalinist ideology. Folks, if you got anything out of this program, I ask that you share it with others. Social network, please send me an email, studio@HagmanandHagman.com. Let me know what you think. I always read every email that I do receive. Again, I thank you for listening. Thank you so much for your support. May God bless you. Have a great day.
The Doug Hagman Radio Show is brought to you by The Hagman Report. Tune in to The Hagman Report weekdays, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. For more information, go to HagmanReport.com. That's HagmanReport.com.